This is The Guardian.
Hey, Laura Murphy Oates here. Today we've got an extra episode of Full Story for you from our brand new podcast, Save for Later, made by Guardian Australia's culture and lifestyle team. If you haven't already, go and subscribe to Save for Later wherever you get your podcasts. But for now, here's the show.
Hello, I'm Michael Sun, and this is Save for Later from Guardian Australia.
And I'm Alex Gorman.
We are back in the office, in the studio again. And the reason I know this is because I was walked in on at lunch by a colleague who called me with like mayonnaise dribbling down my face. So we're like well and truly back into office culture.
Michael's all cleaned up now, fortunately, and we're here to talk about the hottest trends of this year and what we can expect for 2022. Will Mayoface be among them? Michael hopes so.
This episode, we have Ashley Chang, culture and trends lead at YouTube, coming in to help us figure out what we should let go of this year, Mayoface, and what we should expect 2022 in gaming, music, all our internet habits.
Plus, we have another special guest coming in, Cam Williams, who's going to talk to us about the nostalgic and awkward time in which we set up our teenage emails. We're all going to reveal our embarrassing teen emails, including some special cameos from Steph Harmon and Laura Murphy Oates. And I'm going to reveal my not embarrassing at all and extremely cool one too.
We're also going to reveal to you what topped our list this week in terms of music, film, books, random culture in general. That's the podcast, baby.
Today we're talking vibes, specifically the vibes we got from this year and the vibes we're beginning to feel out for next year. And to do that, we have a king of vibes, Ashley Chang. He is the culture and trends lead at YouTube Asia Pacific and a man who once told me last week at a party that the only reason he has a job is because of the internet. So Ash, what's the vibe?
Hello. And what... I don't know how to follow that intro. First of all, it is true that the only reason I have a job is because of the internet. Shout out to the internet. But yeah, vibes, I think vibes are looking up. I'm quietly optimistic about the vibes.
Looking back for a second, could you tell me about something that made you quietly optimistic from 2021?
One thing that I loved, and this is kind of more of a general trend, is this mainstreaming of non-English language content and non-English language culture kind of getting their shine. Asian voices in particular is something that I really enjoyed seeing. I think back to 2020 when South Korea's Parasite was the first foreign language film to win an Oscar, and that was a huge deal. And I think off the back of that, we've seen more and more huge monolithic non-English language content really take root. Squid Game. Who would have thought that Netflix's most viewed show would be Korean language? You know,
all it takes to get people to read subtitles is horrific graphic violence.
Well, I think one thing that I am also really enjoying seeing, obviously, about the rise of and the popularity of non-white content is that we're actually getting non-white content that is allowed to be bad. Like, I think for me, like, mediocrity is the final frontier of representation. Alex, I want to hear about something that you loved this year. What was the trend that took over your entire mind space in a good way?
For me, the trend that I really adored was something that is kind of a carryover from 2020 that I thought would stop in 2021 and instead accelerated, which is the normalization of flaking. You're allowed to cancel anything at any moment for any reason now. Sometimes maybe if it's high pressure, you can say that reason is COVID-like symptoms. But I think it's kind of, you know, when someone cancels on me, I always feel like I've been given a gift of time, and I also love being able to just really say the honest truth that I'm just super not feeling it if I don't want to turn up for something.
Has the normalization of flaking gone too far? I would like to denormalize flaking again, personally.
Now I want to know, what have you hated of 2021?
I have hated the normalization of soup so much. Have we all seen that TikTok where it's two girls and they're eating soup and they're like, gorgeous, gorgeous girls love soup.
Gorgeous, gorgeous girls love soup.
soup girls are the most popular girls in the chicken coop.
And they're just like sipping on their soup in a diner. And I feel like that has really actually led to increased discourse around soup.
But I quite like
that I personally hate.
I quite liked the TikTok good soup trend where people would drink things that weren't soup.
Good soup.
And then declare good soup from their own salty tears to an entire piece of onion.
Soup is not a food.
Ash, what about you? Any trends that you are not in love with from the year that was?
Something I hated was the word chuggy.
Oof.
Because the word chuggy is itself pretty damn chuggy, no?
Yeah, it's got an onomatopoeic quality to it.
I hope we never have to hear that ever
saying
again.
Saying the word chuggy out loud kind of gives me the mouth feel of ingesting soup.
I think the trend that I hated most is the mid-aughts revival, which is something that's kind of happening in fashion particularly. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a return to sort of super low jeans and glitter on your face, and it looked horrible the first time around, but the main reason why I despise it is actually because it makes me realize that I am now old enough to remember a trend that I hated, see it come back, and just hate it again.
Look, low-rise jeans, I get it, like, hateable, but also feel like I controversially love 2005 fashion. Like, if you see me in a skirt over jeans, no, you didn't. But I'm also really curious, like, just about a general 2021 year in review. I'm thinking of an article that I read in the New Yorker from American luminary Kyle Chaker, who has listed off some vibes that were the top vibes of the year. I'm talking things like crumpled mask in a puddle on the sidewalk vibes, or famously from this year, although it seems like a long time ago, Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez kissing in masks vibes.
I love that vibe so much because it was that kind of painful nostalgia, mm-hmm. also like quarantine core, but additionally like breaking health advice simultaneously.
It was such a confluence of factors. But Ash, you canonically work at YouTube. I don't know why I said that word.
It's because you wanted to say famously and then said canonically instead.
I'm not allowed to say the word famously anymore.
Famously, Michael is banned from saying the word famously.
You know what?
So canonically, he has adopted the word canonically.
I'm totally fine with that. Ash, you canonically work at YouTube. What sort of trends and like data insights have you been noticing this year with regards to viewing?
So I think what's interesting about aesthetics in general is, when it comes to YouTube specifically, is that we've really seen a rise in the use of connected TVs when it comes to YouTube. And we actually did, my team actually did a report on aesthetics, and I'm just going to read a few that we looked at. Bardcore.
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 As in Shakespeare, the bard?
Not the bard, bard. Bard as in musician, like okay. Old-timey musician. It's old England, and it's covers of popular songs with lute instrumentation and, you know, old English lyrics subbed in.
I want thy love and all thy lover's revenge. The envy could write a bad romance.
I absolutely hate it. What's next?
Cottagecore?
Yes.
Oh, cottagecore, we're all across.
Which is this very homely, you know, wood burning stove in a cabin in the Blue Mountains vibe. You have dark academia, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Hogwarts elevated, I think is the best way to think about that.
And also a mood that Kyle Chaker name-checked in his New Yorker essay too.
By referencing Sally Rooney's Beautiful World, Where Are You? Which features a main character who is a writer who lives in a very large, potentially gothic manner in Ireland.
And Y2K, I think, is the other major kind of aesthetic or vibe that was quite prominent.
I find that very funny because it almost feels like anecdotally Y2K is on its way out. Like it's had its peak and now we're transitioning more into what Alex was saying about the mid-aughts. But you're saying that it still remains king on YouTube, I guess.
Well, it was all of these were big in the last 2 years, I would say. Mm-hmm. And the point that I wanted to make about connected TVs is that a lot of creators have made content that ape these aesthetics, and there'll be live streams of, you know, dark academia, you know, cottage core channels. And
can you describe what one of these live streams looks like? Is the creator kind of present and there? Is it just music?
Do you know what the lo-fi hip-hop girl is?
Oh, yeah.
Lo-fi girl?
I know her too well.
Yeah. So
let's pretend that I know and explain it to our audience.
Okay, so
I have no idea.
So lo-fi girl is a continuous radio stream on YouTube, basically. And it's characterized by this genre of music called lo-fi hip-hop, which is kind of interesting because it's hard to, there aren't any stars in this genre, so it's very like nameless, but it's instantly recognizable and it's meant to be good for productivity, for people to work to. But there's a visual that is projected in conjunction with this music, and it's a anime style girl studying basically, and she's studying in perpetuity. And it's interesting because people will congregate in this live stream to study. So if you look at the live chat of Lo-Fi Girl, there's people from Brazil being like, hey, I need a prompt for the, you know, I need to finish my essay. And people are actually helping each other do schoolwork essentially through this live chat on this video. So it's this lightning rod for bleary-eyed students or white-collar workers.
Or worshipping at the altar of productivity queen, lo-fi girl. She is the moment.
Yeah. And I think what's happened in the last 2 years is that people have cast lo-fi girl to the bigger screens in their house, as well as this other aesthetic content. And what's interesting to me is that means that these vibes, they're actually spilling out of the screen on your television and permeating spaces.
People are literally casting a vibe into their home.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'm really keen to talk about, you know, what is next in trends, because as we know, I am obsessed with keeping up with the times. And Alex, I know that you have been doing a lot of reading, particularly about a Pinterest report specifically, which is going to tell me exactly how to dress and act in 2022.
Indeed. I for the last few years, every year Pinterest has tracked people's search data and mapped growing trends that they suspect are going to escalate further the following year. Pinterest, for those who are not aware, is a sort of image and more recently also sort of video mood board creation. And people use it a lot for food and lifestyle and most kind of stereotypically to plan their weddings.
And their predictions have been very accurate in the
past.
Yes,
they have. So 8 out of every 10 of their predictions has done exactly that in previous years. I think the most wretched incarnation of this is in the 2021 Pinterest Predicts report, which came out in 2020. They said that one of the big food trends of the year would be epic charcuterie, which is already quite lame.
Explain to me in graphic detail what epic charcuterie
is. I'm talking like florets of prosciutto and overspilling abundances of grapes, which, given that we were more confined to our homes than we thought we would be at the beginning of this year, certainly makes sense that it kind of tracked on. But then just late last month, Martha Stewart Living declared that the charcuterie chalet was the most festive treat of the year. So a charcuterie chalet is like a gingerbread house made of meat. The roof is a tiled roof made of overlapping salamis. There's a crest of cream cheese on top to represent snow. There's Chex biscuits for windows. And then it's a snow-covered chalet. So, of course, surrounding the house is even more cream cheese.
I have to admit that I'm looking at this image right now, and in my hungry, half-delirious phase, it does look vaguely scrumptious.
Michael, no.
I'm coming out as a pig for prosciutto. I want this charcuterie chalet. Alex, as someone who's now read the Pinterest 2022 predictions, what do you think are like the most ridiculous trends that are about to come our way? Like, and when I say ridiculous, I mean like I want like a charcuterie chalet level of ridiculousness. So please hit us.
So I'd say like the most hardcore ridiculous one is reshaping architecture around your pets, which is something that I could immediately see happening given all of the pandemic puppy booms. But there's one trend towards catified homes or designing entire like sunrooms just for your cavoodle. And then the other, once again, like drawn into the home trend that I like a little bit more is the idea of an emotional escape room, which is not like a real escape room. Although,
is it a rage room?
It's not really a rage room. It's more like a sort of caving in on yourself. So if you're sort of hard into sort of witch core, you might create an entire crystal cave in your house. And that sort of ties into another kind of sub-element of that trend, which they've called lounge eerie, which is kind of spooky pajamas, which I am very here for and very much already wearing.
Two things that I also would like to bring to the table for everyone's thoughts. I have also been reading a 2022 forecast from Soon Futures, which is another kind of organization which does a lot of trend predicting and forecasting. And they predict something called the Bleisure Boom.
Hate that.
Which is a phrase I truly do not want to say out loud ever again. They're basically predicting the combination of business travel and leisure travel, hence the portmanteau bleisure.
I feel like allowing work to permeate your holidays deserves a word as bad as bleisure.
If they wanted a word that was truly bad, I want to know why they didn't go with pissness.
It could be a holopay.
A holopay. Wow.
Obviously, Pinterest uses search trends to kind of make predictions into the future. I imagine that YouTube has this same capacity. Are there any kind of nascent things that you think are about to explode based on what people are already looking for?
What's interesting is a format which is live streaming and how comfortable we are with live streaming. And in a way, we've all been doing that for the last 2 years, you know, if you think of the Zoom meetings that we've all been in, you're going to see things like e-commerce go hand in hand with video live streaming.
Is that not just Danos Direct?
That is Danos Direct. It's 100% is Danos Direct, but it's with tools and with talent and with community that doesn't exist in that space. And then just the idea that events themselves can be live streamed. And we saw that again, in the last 2 years, whether that was concerts or whether that was fashion shows or whether that was, sporting events, this idea that, you know, it's very hard to have a surrogate experience for being at the thing live, but this is pretty damn good. And on top of that, it democratizes that experience, right? Where, say, it's a fashion show, that fashion show is typically only viewable by 200 people in a room in Paris somewhere. But
and the fashion reference is interesting because that was sort of already happening with Instagram. You'd watch the front row as people uploaded Instagrams of it, like pretty much in real time, and that's been happening for the last 6 years. But the difference is the quality. Like watching a runway show on Instagram stories, like it looks terrible.
Yeah. And then I think fashion houses really had to think about the way they presented them. You know, you've seen brands like, I think, Balenciaga did really experimental things reimagining what a fashion show could be. So again, that collision of video games, they presented a runway show, I'm using air quotes here, that was basically video game renders.
Which like, thank God for it, because I feel like we all have live stream fatigue, right? It's like, I don't think I can watch another live stream again for at least 6 months. So I'm glad that people are actually doing interesting things with it beyond just a video.
Live streaming as a format, this kind of Truman showification of all of our lives, is going to be something that's interesting. It'll be more pervasive and it'll have more functionality and more intersection with our daily lives in a way that feels more seamless.
That really frightens me.
Always on.
Alex, I'm very curious to hear what you think is in store for the 22-ification of trends.
So I have one very specific trend prediction that may or may not come true. It is a fashion prediction. It is the green screen skivvy. I'm predicting that in 2022, someone will release a turtleneck top that is the exact color of a green screen that has a small QR code on its breast that you can scan to pull up an AR version of the outfit they would actually like to be wearing.
The Green Wiggle wants their money back.
Green Wiggle energy, and then I think no one will actually use it for that purpose, and then in about 10 years' time, it's going to become a cult aesthetic.
Is this an original thought, Alex?
I think it is.
You should keep this. This is a million-dollar idea you're sitting on.
It's a million-dollar idea in that I'm going to sue you for $1 million.
If it ends up happening.
Mine is actually stolen from a Twitter user whose name is Kyle. Don't know what his last name is, but Kyle has released a very satirical list of 2022 trend predictions, one of which I'm very keen to see happen, not for any other reason than curiosity, of course. It's the mainstreaming of ketamine, which has obviously already happened, but also influencer posts sponsored by ketamine clinics alongside the mainstreaming of ket.
Ash, what's yours? Do you have a shoot from the hip prediction?
Maybe a corporate metaverse where we are all
awful.
We are all white collar workers in the game of life.
So just life then.
Did that already happen, not in a metaverse sense, but a few years ago where they had that live role-playing game where people pretended to be at an office and it was being run by teens and then adults took it over and started doing it badly and they were really upset?
I think there was a Reply All episode about a Facebook page that was a pseudo-corporation.
Yes, it was exactly that.
So that, but more involved.
Ash Chang, thank you so much for being on this very silly podcast and talking to us about all the silly little trends that are coming next year.
Some of which aren't silly and are actually quite nightmarish.
Talking about silly though, our next segment is actually going to be all about the extremely dumb childhood emails that we used. Do you have a childhood email that you would like to confess to us?
How dare you two try to expose me like this? I am your guest. No, I did, of course. It was a Hotmail and it was thefoolonthehill37@hotmail.com.
That's very lyrical, The Fool on the Hill.
Which is a lesser-known Beatles cut. So I was very smug and self-satisfied that I knew who the Beatles were when I was like 13.
That's a very hip one.
It could have been worse.
I don't think you need to be embarrassed about that. That's just you showing off that you're a cool teen.
We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, that email segment I promised. It's a segment full of ladybugs, cool dudes, kinky girls, skater boys.
And too much 69.
Cam Williams joins us to talk all of the emails that we named very awkwardly. And hornily, some would even say.
Yeah, thirsty teenage email addresses. Now it's time to go back, way, way back to when you first set up an email address for yourself. We've got writer and broadcaster Cam Williams in, who has very recently created a somewhat viral TikTok about this very subject, discussing the burden of an embarrassing teenage email. Cam, tell us, what made you think about this in the first place?
So it was this trend going around on TikTok where people were using audio from the film Interstellar.
No!
To communicate a message to their past self. And so I thought, oh, what's something that I wish someone had told me from the future? And I immediately thought, email address, because I was like, I wish somebody had told me to take the internet a little bit more seriously, because then I would have avoided the embarrassment of the teenage email address I originally had. And so made the video and then came back and I noticed a big uptick in views, but mainly the comments section had just kind of like blown up with people saying, I feel incredibly seen, but also the confession started, which was people saying, I had this email address and it was everything from, you know, skater boys to butterfly kisses to really interesting uses of language combined with email addresses that you would never think to do now.
People also used too many numbers. Like, I feel like almost every childhood email address I'm seeing has, like, a 69 here, a 420 there.
The 69 is ultra weird to me. I mean, I guess 13-year-old boys, it makes sense that they'd be putting 69 in their email address. But the prevalence of the 69...
It was out of control. Just the confidence of people to go, this is who I am. I'm going to use 69 in my email address.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, birth dates. People were really out there in terms of saying, like, this is my birth year, which now is... It's like, no way, you're not going to do that at all.
So what was the cringy email that you found yourself stuck with for too long?
Okay, so when my dad first signed up to the internet with like an Australian internet provider, you obviously had to have an email address. And so he's like, we need to pick one. And me being a very cocky teenager at the time wanting to impress my friends was like, I want my email address to be Nugget Man, because my nickname in high school was Nugget, and I just thought my whole future was like laid out in front of me in picking this email address. I just imagined like emailing all my friends and being so cool as the guy that got the email address with his nickname. And so my dad eventually like signed up for it with that email address, which we kind of used as a family for the first few years that we had the internet. And then obviously when I was old enough, I kind of spun off into my own embarrassing series of like further email addresses, which I think were just like Nugget Man and then like again a number.
It was Nugget Man 69.
Hundreds of iterations of Nuggets.
I'm also really imagining that this email was one of those like first email providers as well. I'm talking like Nugget Man at aussiemail.com.au or something.
Yeah, pretty much you've nailed it.
I can literally hear the dial up modem playing in the back of my head now.
Cam, your TikTok made me think about my own childhood email addresses, of which I had many, many, because my name is Michael Sun, and apparently that is a very common internationally known name. So for a really long time, my email was BLAAZI.
Blazy.
It was short for Blaziken.
Honestly, Blazy sounds like a startup that's going to IPO at like unicorn valuation.
But it was short for Blaziken, the very fiery chicken Pokemon of the mid-2000s. And Cam, in your article for The Guardian, when you write about this, you talk about how people have to use their embarrassing old emails in official documents. I recently had to get out of a very long-running yoga membership, but unfortunately, I didn't realize that I had signed up with this Blazy email in order to get a second free trial on top of my already free trial with my like actual email the first time round.
Right, so Blazy is at this point draining your bank account.
Exactly. But unfortunately, yes, I had to email this very, very bougie, spiritually aligned yoga studio from Blazy.
But Cam, Michael's humiliation is somewhat minor compared to some of the stories that you ended up fielding from people who held on to their teenage emails. Can you talk to me a bit about that?
Yeah, so there was a guy who thought it would be a really good idea to sign up with his first name, Hugh, but then he went with Jass. So he had Hugh Jass, which is like just, that's just a carryover from like when you used to phone prank people. But still, he was stuck with it for a really long time. It's so hilarious, the teenage mind applied to the internet. Probably my favorite story in the whole piece is Pippa, who said that she uses an email address, PippiGirlXO, and she used it to buy a house. And she said that when she was kind of doing all the official documents with the lawyer to kind of like do everything official, she had to like say it out loud and the lawyer like cocked their eyebrow. But she said she held on to it for sentimental reasons. She said she's had it for a really long time. She has documents and correspondence with friends who have passed away within that email address. And so that's the reason why she's held on to it for so long. And that's something that came up as a big theme in a lot of the comments and the correspondence around the TikTok video. People are just saying like, I can't walk away because I'm fully invested in this. My whole life is built around this email address.
I'm locked out of my teenage email address, and with it goes like my entire adolescence online, but I also do not have any regrets about that.
Alex, don't bury the lead. What was your teenage email address?
Well, because I am extremely cool, my email address was gray_C's, which is a Bauhaus lyric. Can you tell I was a teenage goth?
Oh my God.
So Cam, we've got a little treat for you since you decided to be vulnerable and reveal your own embarrassing email, as did the people that responded to your TikTok. We've hit up some of our beloved colleagues, Laura Murphy-Oates and Steph Harmon, and asked them to share their teenage email stories too.
Hello, my first email address. I had it until I was 18 years old, and it was ferrets_united. Which colleagues have since suggested sounds like a very bad soccer team. I think it had something to do with Monty Python. I found them really funny as a kid. They had a whole song about sticking a ferret up their nose. The fact that I held on to it until I was 18, I'm not proud of.
Okay, so I was trying to link my Medicare account to MyGov to get my vaccination certificate, and they were asking me about my details, and I gave them like 5 different addresses. Didn't match any address that was on the system. The guy was getting more and more bemused. And so I was like, oh God, it's gonna be a really embarrassing email from my childhood. So I gave him my email, which was teardropofmyheart@outlook.com or something, which is like a line from a fantasy novel that I had read as a kid. And he was like, no, that's not the email that I have in front of me. And I was like, oh, is it Surfy Babe 67 or something? Like, I just, was it something like that? And he's like, no. And it was tickle_me_LMO, my initials, but Elmo 3, which is my favorite number. So turns out I hadn't changed my Medicare details that I had listed with the government since I was a child. So that's my embarrassing email story.
Personally, I feel like we should reclaim our old email addresses. Like if it was up to me, I would say that using an embarrassing childhood email is actually praxis. It's anti-capitalist.
It is anti-capitalist. It's a rejection of corporate norms.
But I feel like it is kind of back. Like, anecdotally at least, every time I scroll through Instagram, I see that another one of my friends has changed their username to like sexyangel420. So if you see me with the username handsomehunk69, you will know what has happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I have noticed there is this trend where kind of like, you know, Gen Zs are now kind of revering 90s internet culture in the same way that I guess when I was a kid, we treated the 80s.
It's a nostalgia we have for the old internet.
Like, I believe
it's
some may call it the good internet.
Yes.
Miss your GeoCities.
Web 1.0, bring it back.
So Cam, I understand that you thought that you'd escaped your teenage email, but it turns out you actually hadn't.
Yeah, so recently I had to reach out to my dad and get him to email something to me, and I said, what's your email address, Dad? And he goes, you know the email address. And I was like, no, I don't. Like, what is it? First name, last name, number, tell me. And he was like, Nugget Man. And so this whole time, he has been using that email address. And my dad's a medical professional.
Thank you so much, Dr. N Man.
I'm just happy to say Nugget Man lives.
What a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much for coming in today, Cam.
We'll see you later.
Cheers.
It is top of the list time. Alex, what are you obsessed with this week?
I'm obsessed with a book of poetry because I just saw it read live. It is How to Make a Basket by Jazz Money, and she released it earlier this year, but due to the pandemic could only have a book launch last week. She read 5 poems from the book and they were exquisitely beautiful. They were accompanied by live guitar. Maybe it was just the kind of overwhelm of live culture, but I actually found myself crying in the reading of one of her poems, which was called The Billa Cycle. That's all about the movement of rivers. It's just playful, heartbreaking, and at times quite funny work. It's really romantic. She is very talented, and you should all buy her book for someone you love for Christmas. And Michael, what's top of your list?
Top of my list this week is an album by Banoffee. It's called Tear Tracks. It came out earlier this year, actually, but I have to admit that I did not actually listen to it before I had to interview her last week for an incredible story that you'll be reading in The Guardian this summer. But like any good culture writer, I did listen to her entire album beforehand, and now I cannot stop playing it. It's hyperpop perfection. It's a breakup album. It's crying in the club. It's shedding tears on the dance floor. It's everything I want it to be and more. It's called Tear Tracks, and it's out now. Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, you should absolutely subscribe to Saved for Later wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you really liked us, you should leave us a rating and a review, but only if you really liked us, because our egos are fragile.
This episode was produced by Krishma Luthuria and Joe Coney, who also handcrafted music.
We'll be here again next week because our feeds just never, ever, ever stop scrolling.
And this episode was exec produced by Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and Steph Harmon.
Miss you, Steph.